This week on Behind the Lens, a joint initiative by the city and Entergy would put up dozens of new video cameras in part of New Orleans. We'll examine the pilot program and hear privacy advocates' concerns. Also, 34 New Orleans schools had to void results from standardized exams last year. That's due to test policy violations and suspected cheating. And a judge awards the Lens more than $30,000 in attorney's fees in a key public records case. We'll talk about the ruling. I'm Tom Wright. You're listening to Behind the Lens, brought to you by Community Support. Show your support online today at thelensnola.org/donate. The City of New Orleans and Entergy are teaming up to install 90 new video cameras in the Central Business District. It's a so-called Smart Cities pilot, and it's one of many initiatives to increase data collection and surveillance capacity across New Orleans. Lens reporter Michael Isaac Stein reports.
The plan is to install two new pieces of technology on streetlights that go along Poydras and Canal Streets in the CBD. The two types of technology, the first is called a photonode, and these are basically sensors that will take in daylight and kind of tell the street lamp when to go on, except the ones that the city wants to install are a bit smarter, as they'd say. So they can also collect other data in terms of, I think the big one here is to collect data on streetlight outages. So trying to create a system where you can detect outages more quickly. The second piece of technology, they're called advanced camera sensor devices. And basically they include a bunch of different technology, but they include a video camera, audio detection, Wi-Fi hotspots, as well as weather detection. And these will be installed on the light poles as well.
How many cameras would actually be installed?
So the original contract called for 146 cameras. We were told that that's going to be amended down to just 90. And something that I forgot to mention, the full cost of this program is going to be $3.2 million.
Funded by Entergy.
That's right. So the money is going to be coming from Entergy. Specifically, the money is coming from savings that the company realized after Congress passed corporate tax cuts in 2017. So the corporate federal tax rate for Entergy fell from 35% to 21%. And as a result, Entergy realized savings of approximately $50 million. And those dollars are being spent on a number of different things. A lot of it's going just in customer credits back on bills. A lot of it's going to energy efficiency program. But $3.2 million were carved out to set up this smart city pilot.
90 cameras going up, and you've got a sense of how many we already have installed in the city and in different programs. What kind of numbers are we looking at?
You know, when we're talking about video surveillance in New Orleans, we're talking about the Real-Time Crime Center. It's kind of this surveillance hub that the city set up also back in 2017. And right now they have live video feeds coming in from roughly 442 city-owned cameras, along with 331 additional cameras that are privately owned but connected to the city system through this program called SafeCam Platinum, which charges people a fee to have their private cameras, you know, connected to the city system. Now, these new cameras wouldn't act in the same way. According to the Cantrell administration, these wouldn't be providing live feeds into the Real-Time Crime Center. However, the city would be able to access the footage from these cameras after the fact. So again, we're not talking about live footage here, but it is still an increase in terms of public cameras and footage that the city will have access to.
What have you heard so far from privacy advocates about this?
Yeah, concerns, as always, when more cameras go up, privacy advocates, you know, will have their concerns. But I think, you know, it's the concerns were interesting in that they were surprised that the contract was even up for consideration without them knowing. And I think, you know, what you see here and what you've seen in the past from the Cantrell administration is that some of these surveillance expansion conversations are happening in venues that you wouldn't necessarily expect them to be happening, right? So, we heard from advocates from Ion Surveillance, which is a local coalition of groups concerned about the expansion of surveillance. And, you know, they were saying basically, how should we be expected to look at every smart and sustainable city council committee docket just to or agenda just to make sure there might not be anything surveillance related? And we've seen that before when the Cantrell administration had its cleanup NOLA initiative, a $1 million initiative to clean up litter and stop illegal dumping. In that was funding for 10 cameras. And now the Department of Sanitation is saying they're also gonna fund an additional 10 cameras this year. So again, I think the concerns are not just about the capabilities of these cameras, but it's the fact that it's happening without the group knowing. This group that is fully focused on surveillance in New Orleans didn't know that this camera expansion was happening.
The whole notion of smart technology keeps cropping up. In fact, not just surveillance purposes, but energy efficiency, which seems to be a big part of this particular pilot. And it really plays into those broader efforts to implement a sort of smart cities strategy here in New Orleans.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, the first time I heard the term smart cities, the council set up a smart and sustainable cities committee in 2018. And that's kind of when I first found out about it. And since then, I've been trying to, you know, nail down a specific definition of what smart cities means. And it's not that easy. There's a lot of different definitions, but I think what brings all of them together is this idea that cities can collect more data from both city infrastructure, residents, visitors, and use that data to enhance any number of services. So here, you know, when we're talking about these cameras, the stated purpose here is for traffic configuration, right? So all these cameras are near the Superdome. So it might help the city, for example, figure out how traffic works when it comes to Essence Fest versus, you know, a Saints game, and whether they should be doing things differently for each of those games. And for each of those events, council member Jason Williams talked to us about how it could be a force multiplier for the NOPD. So they don't have to be managing traffic on site and they can be elsewhere doing other police work. On the other side of it, there, you know, with all these smart cities technologies, there's also another side, which is that more data collection from residents increases privacy concerns. And I think what's tricky about smart cities is that people aren't always aware when these things are installed about their surveillance capabilities, because they're pitched as they're pitched with the main idea being something other than surveillance or police work. And you saw that, for example, in San Diego just this week, are having a pretty staunch debate about these same exact cameras, right? So they got about 3,200 of these cameras back in 2016. The police didn't start using the video from those cameras until 2018. And it wasn't until after that that the public was made aware that these things even had cameras in them, right? So even, you know, just looking to San Diego this week with the same piece of technology we're considering, I think, you know, the issue you run into again is the technology being implemented without citizens really understanding what it is.
It's also, just in closing, remarkable to me how we're overlaying, you know, a lot of smart 21st century technology and systems over, you know, some very old infrastructure, you know, 19th century infrastructure in some cases. And, right. And one wonders how well the city manages that meshing.
Right, right. And, you know, looking down the line, it's not just how they handle it, but is it worth the expense? You know, there's a lot of considerations here. But I think what you're saying, does it mesh with our old infrastructure, is an interesting one.
Michael Isaacstein, reporting for The Lens. And as always, we thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
The state's Department of Education reports almost 1,500 standardized exams at almost 300 schools across Louisiana were voided last year. That includes 34 schools in New Orleans. Our own Marta Jusen breaks down the numbers.
Yeah, so this year in Orleans Parish, we had 134 exams that were voided across, that was 34 different schools in the city, and those are public schools that we're talking about. that number is significantly lower than the previous school year. But that's because in that 2017-18 school year, John F. Kennedy High School had 144 exams alone voided, which was because they administered the wrong test to their students. And that was in a transition year when the state was moving from one version of a test to another. So that seems like more of an oversight than some type of systemic, you know, problem that people would be really worried about.
What are some of the notable results by school?
As far as results on a school level, we did have five or six schools that had more than 10 voids. But, you know, that's not too remarkable. Those things mainly across the district happen due to testing policy violations rather than suspected cheating, which is the, you know, the other main concern you have when it comes to standardized testing. The two incidents that did fall into that suspected cheating category, one occurred at Harney Elementary, which is no longer open, but this happened last year when the district was running it, and there were seven exams that were voided due to, or they were voided after an erasure analysis was completed, and that's something that the state uses to see, you know, whether an exam had an abnormal number of wrong answers to right answers changed, because that could indicate some form of systemic cheating. In fact, that was the what was happening in Atlanta, if we all remember that cheating scandal. But that was just seven exams at Harney. And then statewide, 99 exams were voided for plagiarism. But I do think it's notable that 17 of those voids did come in Orleans Parish. And of those 17, 13 were at Sophie B. Wright Charter School. We asked the state and we asked Sophie B. Wright's CEO what happened there. They didn't provide us with any details, so we're not exactly sure what occurred, but those exams were voided at that school for that reason.
Any implications for schools with the highest numbers of voided exams?
There shouldn't be too big of an implication for any of these schools as far as having these exams voided, just because they're pretty small numbers. But when you do have an exam canceled out, it means that you don't get to count it for your school performance score. Like I said, the majority of exams in the district were voided due to testing policy violations, and those can come either from an administrator, say, letting kids take the test for too long. They can also come, you know, if a student brought in contraband, say, like a cell phone or something. But that was the majority of the voids in the district.
Any response from the school district and the charters themselves?
Both the school district and the charters, you know, I think they're always very conscious of test security. Notably, a number of years ago, the Recovery School District and NOLA Public Schools started requiring all of their charter schools to hire a third-party testing monitor to come in during testing days. And so that's a person who comes in and observes, you know, not only the staff, but the students and the time. And when you read the reports, you know, sometimes you'll see things like administrator close their eyes or you know, administrator wasn't watching students and, you know, little notes like that and ways and improvements that if they're not necessarily testing policy violations could potentially help improve testing security in the future. Overall, I would say that there was nothing too remarkable about this. This is just a report that the state puts out every year. Just to, you know, kind of keep track about what's going across statewide and in these trends where exams are being voided.
Marta Jusen reporting on the Education Beat. Thank you, Marta.
Thank you.
Back in the 1980s, in Section G of the New Orleans Criminal District Court, everybody smoked. Section G was Judge Frank Shea's courtroom, and when you talk to lawyers who practiced in front of him during that time, or defendants who were sentenced by him, it's one of the first things they will tell you.
So it wasn't unusual when you opened the door to the courtroom. It was like, I mean, it was worse than a bar room, okay?
Today, of course, it is acknowledged that smoking's bad for you, but back then, everyone was doing it. From The Lens, this is the Section G podcast, looking back at the controversial career of Judge Frank Shea and the New Orleans Criminal District Court during the rise of mass incarceration.
Nick Krastel presents Section G in print and on podcast, coming soon at thelensnola.org. You're listening to Behind the Lens. A judge at Civil District Court in New Orleans has awarded the Lens about $30,000 in attorney's fees in a public records lawsuit. This news organization sought 16 months of fake subpoenas issued by the Orleans Parish District Attorney's Office. Lens editor Charles Maldonado has the latest.
Thursday's hearing was about a small part of the case. The main part of the case is over. We sued for public records. We won that lawsuit. We won the public records. They were declared to be public in spite of the DA's denial of them.
And just to be clear, the public records requested were the fake subpoenas themselves as presented by the DA's office, correct?
Yeah, it was about a year and a half's worth of fake subpoenas that we were looking for. So we won that suit in district court. The DA appealed. We won, you know, in the circuit appellate court and the state Supreme Court. So yesterday was kind of the last step, which is that under the public records law, if you sue a public agency for public records and win, that agency is supposed to pay your legal fees, pursuant to a judge's order.
Okay.
That's the order we were looking for yesterday.
So essentially, this is the attorney's bill.
Yeah, this is the attorney's bill. Our attorney, Scott Sternberg, and people in his office, including Mike Finkelstein, they did a lot of work on this case. We've been going at this case for 3 years now. We racked up about $30,000 in legal bills, and that was even with Scott being fairly generous. Under the law, the DA is supposed to reimburse those costs, and that's what happened yesterday. We got an order that Scott and his firm, that the work that they did is worth what Scott says it was, and the DA should owe that money.
There was a small adjustment, I suppose, ordered by Judge Kern Reese in terms of the lawyer's bill. What was that?
That was a very small technical thing. Basically, the other lawyer, Mike Finkelstein, mm-hmm. who's working on the case with Scott, they were charging standard rates that set by the Attorney General's office for contract lawyers who work for the state of Louisiana, which according to Scott is fairly, that would be the standard rate in a public records case like this, or at least the rate he usually charges. Michael, that rate is based on how many years you've practiced law. Mm-hmm. In the middle of this lawsuit, hit a threshold that allowed him to bill at a higher rate. But Judge Reese just ordered that his rate should be uniform throughout the whole case. Okay. So that was an adjustment of only, I think, like $100.
The amount approved, I suppose, by Judge Reese in this ruling still comes to about a little over $30,000.
Yeah, I think it's, if I remember correctly, it's about $30,000 in fees, then about $1,500 or $1,600 in costs.
Okay, so explain why, given the state's public records law providing for these fees in this context, why is it still unclear when those fees are actually going to be turned over to our attorneys?
Yeah, so under the state constitution, a state court can't order funds seized from a public agency. And a lot of times, if not most of the time, in public records lawsuits, attorney's fees are awarded but never actually collected because of that. So it's really up to the public agency whether or not they want to pay. Now, you know, the city of New Orleans over the past few years has started paying back some old judgments that it was ordered to pay, but had no, you know, there was no mechanism for collecting. So it's not as if these judgments, or it's not as if judgments against public agencies never get paid, but if we ever see any part of this, it might be somewhat less than $32,000.
And the office of District Attorney Leon Canizero has certainly not said anything as to when they would, you know, give people an idea of when that.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, you know, the district attorney's office has argued for years that its budget is already strained, and this is an additional strain that I'm sure that they don't want to deal with.
All right, fair enough. Charles Maldonado, editor in chief at The Lens. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
That's all for this week. We remind you that we send this podcast out by email every Friday evening. Carnival season is no exception. Sign up for the podcast alerts, story alerts, our Week in Review newsletter, and more at thelensnola.org. You can also find Behind the Lens on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other podcast players. We leave you this week with the sounds of the crew of King Arthur, thanks to our friends at NewOrleansLocal.com. I'm your host, Tom Wright. Thank you for getting Behind the Lens.